This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at southdakotachannel.org.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Kelsey Pritchard. I'm the Communications Director in the Governor's Office. Just want to remind everyone on the phone that you can mute your lines by pressing star 6, and during Q&A, you can unmute by pressing pound 6. And everyone in the room, please use the mics at the table, as usual. And with that, I'll turn it over to Governor Dennis Dugard.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you all for joining, both here in the room and any of you on the phone. I'd like to just address a few things before I open it up for any questions you might have. First, as you know, last Monday we were pleased to announce that Moody's has upgraded South Dakota's bond rating. Because we don't issue any general obligation bonds, they don't give us what's called an issuer credit rating, but they do rate the authorities, the Health and Ed Authority and the Building Authority, and they essentially gave them their highest rating possible, the AA1 rating, which will mean less interest rates, lower interest rates, and less interest payments that we'll make on any issues that we may make in the future. And so it affirms our creditworthiness, something I feel we are worthy of, that affirmation, and it also will save us money, because down the road, as we issue bonds with that high credit rating, we'll be able to demand a lower interest rate be paid on those bonds. So that feels good. I thought I would bring along, and I did bring along, some copies of Moody's Investors Service. It's a quick read. It's maybe 4 pages with big margins and large type, so it's not a long fall asleep kind of read. So those of you in the room, I've got that along and hope you'll take a look at it. I feel very good about it. It does make reference to a number of things that we've done very deliberately over the past several years. We've looked at our ratings from S&P, from Moody's, from Fitch, and some of those ratings are very specific about the scores they give us in different areas and why they gave us a lower score here and a higher score there. And we've looked at those lower score areas and said, what can we do to improve our marks in these areas? And so consequently, we've done a lot of things. We've adopted a constitutional amendment that requires a budget, a balanced budget. We've first issued executive orders that now last session were placed into statute that requires us as a state, long after I'm gone, to issue a long-term financial plan, to issue a capital expenditure plan, to measure our debt against a standard. We've issued our comprehensive annual financial report increasingly more quickly. When I first came into office, it took nearly a year after we closed the books on a financial year to issue the annual report for that year, specifically in 2010. We closed that fiscal year June 30th, and it was June of 2011 before we issued the comprehensive annual financial report. And that does not instill confidence when it takes a full year to get your books balanced and your budget audit reported. And now we've moved that up. This year we issued it in the shortest time ever in late January, and our goal next year is to issue it our goal this year is to issue it before the end of the calendar year. So all these kinds of things add up to the notes that are made by Moody's as they analyzed South Dakota's approach to budgeting and money management, and I think are the basis for their upgrade, and I feel very good about that. And kudos belongs to Jason Dilges, our Commissioner of the Budget of Finance and Management, and our Lieutenant Governor, Matt Michaels. The two of them have made this their project at my request, and they've been to New York a number of times to meet with each of these credit rating agencies, and we've hosted them here in South Dakota. And we've spent, in fact, an entire afternoon at the governor's mansion going through PowerPoints, showing them, look at us. We are doing good things here. You need to compare us to other states that are already AAA rated and see that we're better than some of them. So come on. And they did. They came on. The second thing I want to mention is also, since I was last in the press with you all, Lucas Lynch has announced his retirement as Secretary of Agriculture, and I'm going to regret that loss. He'll be here through March 23rd, will be his last day, and he's been a great leader for our agriculture community. He's a good speaker. He comes with agriculture roots. He has done some hard things, reorganizing the department. The easy course is to maintain the organization, maintain the staffing, and go along to get along. But Lucas made some hard decisions, and our department is better for them. He's also been very effective in ag development. We were adding ag processing facilities. You know, the biggest development win last year is when ag processors announced they were building the largest soybean processing plant in their history, the biggest capital investment in their history in Aberdeen. And they bought enough land that not only will they potentially crush soybeans there, but they'll, down the road, they may process biofuels there or refine the soybean oil for human consumption. So we'll see, but it's definitely going to be a big plant and a big win, and that's just one example of the things that Lucas has done. He's got a good opportunity that I know he'll disclose at the right time, and I don't begrudge him seizing that opportunity. As I am in my second term, and that end of that second term, albeit almost 3 years away, cabinet officials, I'm sure, will be looking for other opportunities, knowing the next governor will want their own team, and they may keep, he or she may keep some of those team members, or they may not. And so it's a little bit of a risk to stick it out and not know. So anyway, well, I'm sorry to see Lucas go, and just want to applaud him for his great service while he was here. Finally, I thought I'd mention last weekend, I was not here on Friday for the press conference because I was in Washington, D.C. at the National Governors Association meeting, which went from Friday through Monday. On Friday, I got there early. I actually traveled Thursday night. We arrived in D.C. about midnight, and because we had meetings Friday morning, met with several folks from the Air Force and the National Guard Bureau about South Dakota's military presence, and reminded the Air Force that South Dakota is very pleased and grateful to have Ellsworth Air Force Base, and that we are hopeful of being not just a great place for the B-1 bomber and for unmanned aircraft operators, but also we hope to be the bed-down place for the long-range strike bomber, and maybe for some tankers and refuelers, we'll see. And reminded them of all the things that we've done through the Ellsworth Development Authority. We're going to be closing on our 48th real estate transaction to safeguard the clear zone and the noise zones around the Air Force Base, and to make sure there's no non-conforming uses, and to the extent that there are, that we reduce them and eliminate them as much as we can. So even as some Air Force bases become more congested around the base, we are striving mightily to make ours less congested. We also help them rebuild build a brand new wastewater treatment plant that they share with the city of Box Elder, that cut their construction costs to the Air Force. It cuts their operating costs to the Air Force. We also were one of the first states in the nation to find unused buildings, unused space on the Air Force Base, and lease it to a private business. It's called an enhanced use agreement. So instead of having an expense on their books, Ellsworth has a revenue stream on their books as a consequence of that private entity, which is essentially a call center for a healthcare service. and I was very pleased. The meetings went extremely well, better than I had hoped, much better than I had hoped. And I hoped that it would just be nodding heads and agreement that South Dakota was good. But there was great enthusiasm for South Dakota as a place for the Ellsworth Air Force Base, and also enthusiasm for South Dakota as a place for our 114th Fighter Wing at Joe Foss Field. And in that, and at that location, I know that we are competing for the choice to bed down the next squad of F-35 fighter jets, the newest generation fighter jets that are being produced today. And in the next four basings, two of them will be on National Guard bases. And so we are hopeful that South Dakota, and in particular Joe Foss Field, will be chosen as the National Guard, National Air Guard base for the next squadron. And we'll see. We'll probably know this summer. So those went very well. And then following all those Air Force visits, I met with Secretary Sylvia Burwell, the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And I delivered several messages. First, I thanked her for her personal interest and involvement in the policy changes they're considering about how funding is reimbursed to South Dakota for services provided to Native Americans who are also Medicaid eligible. I also thanked her for Vicki Wachino, who is the head of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Vicki has been to South Dakota just recently. She is in weekly, if not more than weekly, telephone communication with Kim Molsom-Risden about South Dakota's situation and about Medicaid expansion. And also I thanked her for Mary Smith, who is a leader at Indian Health Services and also has visited South Dakota recently. I wanted her to be aware that that day, Friday, was the 24th day of the 38-day legislative session. And I said, we still are needing some things from you before I can really go to the legislature and say, let's move forward. And one of those most critical documents is the State Health Officer letter. State Health Officer letter. You might remember this whole policy discussion was formally initiated last October when the when Health and Human Services issued what they call a white paper. They publicly issued it and published it on their website, inviting states and tribes nationwide to comment on policy changes they were considering. That state or that white paper then. We responded, the state responded, the South Dakota Healthcare Coalition responded, virtually every tribe in South Dakota responded, the Great Plains Tribal Chairman's Health Board responded, many other states in the nation, many other tribes in the nation responded, and they have been considering all those responses, asking more questions that were generated by the responses. They've been in communication with us about our response and with others about their responses, but their formal decision about the policy change that they will settle upon will be encapsulated in that State Health Officer letter, and we need that in writing. We've had conversations with them about what they think about this or that, but the final decision we yet lack. And so, I reassured the Secretary we are very pleased at the positive progress. I am increasingly optimistic that we will be able to, through these policy changes, find the savings in money we're currently paying for Native Americans who are also Medicaid eligible, find our way to convert some of those payments to 100% reimbursement, and with those savings, offset the cost of expansion to South Dakota. However, I cannot go to the legislature without that State Health Officer letter in black and white. I believe it's imminent. It might come out today. It might come out tomorrow. It might come out next week. But we need that as a precursor. And then at that point, I need to evaluate what is the likelihood that in the time remaining, that the legislature would be willing to dive into the numbers and be satisfied that what I believe is doable, they also believe is doable, and that they want to do it. So that's where things stand with Medicaid expansion today, and the Secretary is aware of this, and I think she and her staff are working mightily. With that, I'll be... I want to open up for questions. I had a couple other things I would talk about, but let's move to questions. Maybe start here in the room.
Governor, you met the other day with transgender students to talk a little bit about their lives and about HB 1008. And I know you've said that you came away with some new perspective. I'm just wondering how your decision-making process is going and how much national sort of response is playing into that decision.
I would say I try to take information where I can get it. I'm certainly most interested in what South Dakotans think. If someone outside of South Dakota can give me solid information, I'm not dissuaded by the fact that it's coming from someone else if it's good information. Facts. I'm less concerned about opinion outside of South Dakota. Where am I on my decision making? I was up till midnight on Wednesday night listening to testimony. I'm still not through it all. As you might imagine, being gone over the weekend, last weekend, and got home Monday night, a lot had occurred in the Friday and Monday that I was gone, my schedule's full when I got back, too. So the other thing about listening to testimony, it's not like reading a transcript. You can't skim through and read quickly. You have to, if someone pauses during their audible testimony, I'm waiting. I'm sitting there waiting. So most of those hearings have taken quite a while, and then I'm listening to testimony on the floor. And then I also have documents that I've received from proponents and opponents about court cases in other states, and so I'm reading those cases as well. And so I'd say I'm a good way through, and I'm sorry to say that my wife has invited some friends over for the weekend from our hometown, and this was something we scheduled a couple months ago, not realizing I'd have to be, you know, doing this sort of thing too. So I have until Tuesday, and I'll get it done before Tuesday, or by Tuesday, I should say. But I'm not sure how quickly I'll get there. I want to do it well. Certainly want to do it as quickly as possible, but it's more important to do it well.
Governor, what, if anything, did you learn from meeting with those transgender South Dakotans?
Well, I heard their personal stories. And so I saw things through their eyes in that sense. I have read other personal stories. Certainly I'm getting personal stories through the emails and through what I read in the paper. You know, there were a number of personal stories related in the newspaper that I had already read. So I saw that through their eyes. And then one of the folks who I met with was the parent, the mother of one of the transgender young people who was also in the room. And so that person told their story, and then she essentially related somewhat the same story, but through her eyes as a parent. That's what I learned.
And, Governor, considering so many other issues that are important in our state, is the issue of where transgender students use the bathroom really at the top of the list of what we need to be looking at as a state?
Well, it's certainly of great concern to many people. To the opponents of the bill, it's a great concern. And so I don't treat it lightly by any means. I do believe that there are... there are many who believe that the state should not engage in those sorts of areas to the degree that it sometimes does, or to the degree that some legislators want us to. And that's true in many areas, not just transgender, but that's true in many areas. Other questions in the room?
Do you think, you mentioned, you know, Medicaid expansion, when do you think it's too late? I mean, the legislature, the House yesterday passed their kind of bill to try and get a two-thirds vote on Medicaid. They're clearly trying to telegraph to you something. So at what point do you think it's just a lost cause?
Yeah, I'll have to evaluate that. Certainly not a cause I can champion without the state health officer letter. And when we receive that letter, then I have to evaluate the psychology of the legislature and the demands on their time on other fronts. And that does ebb and flow dramatically. There will be times like these past few days, crossover day, days when there's votes on very controversial bills, when the time demands are very high and the stressors are very high. And then as you approach the last week of session, there will be many legislators that say, there might be a few of us that are very busy now, but most of us are idle. And so, is that too late then? That's something I'll have to evaluate and decide.
And what's your response to the bill that passed in the House wanting this discussion to be outside of the general bill and in its own measure? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that legislation is unnecessary. I think it stacks rule upon rule. To the extent that you could make the argument, well, should we have a statute then that requires any increase in general fund expenditures to have its own statute that says that decision should be considered by the entire body outside of the general bill? For example, what if we decided we are going to give all nursing homes an increase? That's normally found within the general bill. Should we debate that separately as a separate bill? What if we're going to give higher education a large increase, a 5% increase? Should that be debated outside of the general bill? I suggest that it's appropriately, all those decisions are appropriately within the general bill because each involves a prioritization against which other demands must be balanced. When you pull it out and just say, philosophically, should this be funded or not, it divorces it from the necessary balancing that you have to do against other demands, against limited revenues. You've got a fixed amount of revenue. If you want to spend more here, then you have to spend less there. So all those things, I think, are appropriately debated within the context of the general bill. And so to separate them out, I think, is procedurally wasteful.
Looking back now after crossover day, is there anything that you know now? Do you wish you could have introduced a measure in session? Is there anything you're feeling like is being left out? And is there anything that the legislature has introduced that you're sad to see it have died?
Oh, gosh, I would have to think. Nothing comes to mind. There probably is. I'm just not thinking of it. I have to go through the bill list and then think to myself. We certainly have a lot on the plate. Yeah.
Governor, how about the progress on HB 1182? I mean, this was a big week. Teachers were very hopeful. On Monday, we saw that the House passed that, and now that the Senate committee has also done the same. What does this mean for teachers in our state that they soon could be pulled out of last place?
Well, certainly I'm very pleased about the progress of House Bill 1182. We'll see if we have the votes in the Senate body. Two-thirds vote is always a difficult hill to climb, and I'm sure it'll be close again, as it was in the House, but I'm hopeful. Time will tell there. If it is able to find support and makes its way to my desk, it does offer a great opportunity to reform quite a few things in our education funding system. It targets teacher pay appropriately, because that is the concern, I think, which caused this reexamination of many things in our funding. It's primarily teacher pay that drove that examination. At the same time, that driver allowed us to look at many other things. You know, what is the appropriate staffing level? What, we have small schools with the same student population that have different levels of staffing, and I think it'll help those schools examine themselves, give them a little bit of a benchmark that they're not mandated to adhere to, but they are encouraged, financially encouraged, to move toward. I think it'll also cause school districts to slow down their accumulation of savings and spend those dollars on education. It'll, I think, if it passes, as I hope, it'll slow down the rapid growth in capital outlay, which has caused some places to build more things, buy more things, build more buildings, and it'll allow them to take some of that money and spend it on operations and education instead of on facilities and things. And it also rights some wrongs, in my mind. There are a number of funding streams that some school districts get that others don't, and to the extent that our statewide system attempts to equalize disparities between school districts, those other funds, as they're generically called, outside that equalization creates unfairness, and the bill as written now corrects that unfairness and make sure that if one of the kids in the car has candy, all the kids share in that candy, and not just one gets to hoard it. So there's a lot of things. We're going to improve distance learning, and especially in remote areas of South Dakota, just as telehealth offers distance health care, tele-education, distance learning, is increasingly used in higher education. I think I've mentioned in this room before my surprise at how many students in the dorm at our public universities take distance courses, even though they could walk across campus and get a face-to-face course. It's either more convenient for them, or they like that professor better, or who knows what. But they increasingly embrace distance learning, and we should make full use of that tool in our rural areas especially. So lots of good things in the package, but it all hinges on the money. And if 1182 gets through, I think many of the other things will be embraced.
Are there any questions on the phone line? Any others in the room?
Governor, has your relationship with the House Majority Leader suffered in the last week or two?
Well, I'd say that my relationship with legislators ebbs and flows, you know, just as one's relationship with one's spouse does. There are times when Lynn and I don't see eye to eye, but most of the time we do. And I think that's true about my relationship with legislative leaders. We'll disagree on things, and we'll be unhappy with each other from time to time. But I'd say as a general rule, we get along fine most of the time. I don't love him as much as I love Linda, though. I should clarify that.
Governor, earlier this week, the Senate passed a measure that would legalize cannabidiol, a derivative of marijuana that doesn't create a high for certain people who suffer seizure disorders. I'm wondering if your opinion on that legislation has changed with that amendment.
Yes, it has. I don't know. I shouldn't express my willingness to support that because I need to learn more about it first. There may be some reasons to oppose that of which I'm unaware at present. But my main opposition to the bill was the opportunity for medical marijuana in the plant form to be a gateway toward recreational use, which I think we don't need in South Dakota. and the change to the oil, I think, has none of those concerns attached to them. Maybe there's other concerns about which I'm uninformed, and so I need to learn about that. I will say I have great sympathy for people who have seizure disorders. Our own daughter, Laura, when she was younger, had a number of grand mal seizures, and I can't tell you how Linda and I were just deathly afraid for her. I've learned since then that it's not uncommon. As children reach adolescence, many of them will outgrow that, and happily, Laura did. But that it happened a number of times, and in each of those instances, we were deathly afraid for her. And so, if this is one more. Means by which those kinds of things can be avoided, I certainly want to support that.
Anything else? Go ahead.
The Senate also approved a 20-week abortion ban. I'm just wondering if you have looked at that at all, what your opinion is of that measure.
I have not, and do I remember someone telling me it's been amended? Was it amended? It has been. Okay. I'm aware the bill is out there. Of course, I've been pro-life. I don't support abortion. But, of course, I need to read the bill and see what it says. I don't know what it says in its amended form, and maybe it won't get to me. But if it gets to me, I'll certainly perform all the due diligence that I would on any bill of that has some concern.
All right, it looks like we're out of time. Thanks, everybody.
All right, thank you.